Okay, we're here today to discuss the relationship that is strongly emphasized in the Egan Casey readings, the relationship between spiritual growth and having a personal spiritual discipline in your life, and the development and optimal use of intuitive psychic abilities, a theme that's emphasized over and over in the Casey readings. And we have several panelists here today, some of whom are professional psychics, some of whom have had training in institute courses, and are using their intuitive abilities in their own personal life. And they're going to be commenting and dialoguing about their own perspective on that theme of the relationship between spiritual growth and development, spiritual discipline, and the development use of psychic abilities. So I'll just ask anybody who wants to jump in to start commenting on the questions that you got ahead of time.
Well, I guess I'll start. What I was learning about intuition development, I was actually taking a class with a woman who taught classes in Cape Cod, and what she taught was spiritual development. And so that we, every now and then, we popped into psychometry and we went into psychic stuff, but she also taught healing, works with dreams. We saw the movie Resurrection as one of the classes. We did different kinds of things. Every class was different, and so we learned about auras, one class. We learned about, we did little psychological workshops, you know, different kinds, like a forgiveness workshop one day. Think of everybody you were still angry with and write them down, and then we had to forgive them all and burn the paper. So it was that kind of thing. So our classes went on for a few years. That were, and lots of people took them. A lot of the community took these. It was a community college, and a lot of people took the classes. And then those who wanted to continue knew that if they continued, they were also going to get a mix of intuition development some nights, and maybe the next week they were going to do a little bit of healing. And they would be mixed up, you know, it would be sort of mixed in. And it was really a good way of learning, because it wasn't just about psychicness, because that didn't, it didn't go into the ego. It was really more about psychological healing and how to balance yourself. So that was a good, she was a good teacher, and she did a good job with that. And that's where my background is.
I'd have to say that I first began very early in my life, and it was in the Catholic Church without realizing it, but I just loved that place. And I could be there alone, and I could be there to listen to the Jesuit priest tell stories about compassion and love. And I could also learn to not only pray, but to meditate. And I was told that praying is speaking to God, and meditating was listening to God. And the more I meditated, the more I listened, it seemed like I was getting lighter and lighter in feeling. And I was just a young child then. And it was explained to us by the Jesuit priests that these were gifts. And we experienced healings, laying on of hands, and all of that. Way back in those days, that's some years ago. But then as the years went by and I grew in spirituality, I consciously developed some of those gifts and took courses here at ARE, certainly with Carol Ann Liaris and Henry Reed, and kept the focus on spirituality. For me, that's the very center of any use of psychic abilities. And then I came to learn that in the Edgar Casey readings, he explained that we all, the readings say that we all have psychic ability. And as that is developed, psychic ability then becomes intuitive or more subtle abilities. And so I looked back on my training and saw some of that. And I, to this day, in applying those abilities, work consciously at refraining from being involved in some activities because I find it detrimental. And so that's something I'd like to cover in today's discussion too, is how to protect those gifts.
Well, I think my real beginning was with the ARE study groups in 1968. I was married in 1968, and we were introduced to There is a River, and then to Gina Sermonara's book, Many Mansions. And that just answered all of my questions, because I had many questions. I was in my 20s at the time. I had many questions about why is life the way it is, and why does God allow it to be the way it is? And that was the beginning for me. We joined a study group, and I eventually became a study group coordinator for Northwest Indiana, and we joined the Chicago area ARE speakers team, we gave talks on dream study and meditation and introduction to Edgar Cayce and earth changes as well, because that was a rather popular subject in the 70s in Chicago. And we also taught those courses for the ARE in the Merrillville High School, Merrillville, Indiana, as their adult education program, and they were extremely popular. But before I became involved with the study groups, I was afraid of the experiences that I had. I didn't know where they were coming from. Much like Cayce in his early life, he wasn't sure what the source was, and he had some questions. I had the same, and so I just stayed away from it. But even after becoming involved in the study groups, I didn't allow it to develop until 1989, when I had a family member who had a serious problem which could not be addressed by sitting and talking face to face with them. And I prayed, what can I do? And the answer was, you have to do this with your psychic ability. And I was led in a very spiritual way, because I made it very clear from the beginning that I will not move forward with this unless I know what the source is and I know how it's going to be beneficial to others. And eventually it has become very beneficial to me too, because I get answers from my own life. But without the foundation and without the orientation towards spiritual development, which to me, in my life, it has gone hand in hand. I have worked on my own with dreams. I have reams of notebooks, because I found that in dreams it's like having your own personal psychoanalyst with you every night, and there is no interpretation on the part of this psychoanalyst. He, she knows you. It's really your higher self, of course, knows you like no one else does. And when they tell you that you have these areas that you need to work on, you can trust that. So it's been just all there is for me is to have the spiritual foundation to it. I also came and took Carol Ann and Henry's courses here, and a certified spiritual counselor course, all of which was based on service to others, working with God, with our higher selves, with the angelic realm, in order to help others grow spiritually. And I pray for that with the clients who come to me as well, because that's what I want. I'm interested in helping people to find their life work, find their path, find where they are, and get into whatever kind of discipline will lead them forward in spiritual development, because that's what we're here for. We're here to remember who we are and to get into a life work of service to others.
That sounds great. And I agree with a great deal of where you came from, that and Mary, the church in the beginning, and learning the Bible, and then meeting the Edgar Cayce material, and starting a study group in our home. And I was trying to keep all the people who had responded at the first, but they didn't think they wanted to commit to a weekly study group, so we had a monthly meeting, and we had refreshments at that, and we invited different speakers, and oh, they liked all these sort of new age speakers and all. But we had our weekly study group and focus on the material, which I think is so wonderful. And I have a group now that we're all older women meet in the daytime because they can't drive at night. And here are all these women with all this wonderful life experience that they've had, and many good things that they have done, and opportunities to help others. And I understand that the study group material came into being when someone asked Edgar Cayce how they could learn to be psychic like he was. And so that's where it all started. And so I had the opportunity to ask Gladys Davis one time, his secretary for so many years, how about that? Did those people in that first study group become psychic, as had been the motivating factor for it to start in the first place? And she thought for a minute. She said, yes, everyone. They did increase their psychic ability. And I think that if you stick with that material and you are spiritually oriented, that the two just naturally go together. And I've reached the point where I just recognize immediately when there's one of these nothing happens by chance situations come up. And some of them are rather dramatic and go into great depth. I am presently working with a family. I met him on a plane coming back from South Africa, and he was from what used to be old Zaire, is now called the Democratic Republic of the Congo, and it is neither democratic nor a republic. It has a very cruel dictator who took over from another dictator who died of cancer. But anyway, this man was headed to D.C. To a U.N. meeting. He worked for the World Health Organization. And immediately I knew that I was supposed to meet this man because the lady sitting beside me, I could tell, was she had some project in mind. Well, she was wanting to move up to sit with her sister. So this man came up where her sister was, and they were wanting to trade seats with someone. So that she asked him, would he mind trading seats with sister? And he said, well, no, not if this lady doesn't mind sitting by her. And I knew, oh, yes, this is it. So anyway, we've been very involved with trying to help him. He was told not to go home because others who went home from the meeting were killed. And so we helped him to get his wife and the baby over. They would not let the other three children out of the country, which I feel is rather cruel. But anyway, we don't know all of the purposes of life. But I was so impressed with his great faith and his knowledge of the Bible. And we had 17 hours on the plane, so we had a lot of time to discuss the Bible. He had his Bible with him and the different passages and so forth. So he and his wife have gotten asylum, and now we're working to get the children out. But the conditions are getting terrible over there. And yet his faith is just so amazing. And I have told him, of course, it's because of your faith that I was drawn to help you in the way. And I know that we're supposed to be helping him, and hopefully it will have a good outcome. But there's a quote from the readings that I think is very thought-provoking around this kind of thing, when you know that you were drawn to someone because you were supposed to be helping them. I said, for God has not willed that any soul should perish, but purges everyone by illness, by prosperity, by hardship, by those things needed in order to meet self. In him, by faith and works, are ye made every whit whole. So I think this is part of the process, that these difficult things are really tests. And I know I spoke to Gladys McGarry about this at a time when she was being sued and marriage had failed. And I said, you know, I think that you are being given graduate courses, and it looks to me as though you're just passing them with flying colors. And I do think that this is what happens to us, and we have an opportunity to help others to pass their courses too by this spiritual, intuitive, psychic connection.
So what I hear you saying, all of us, is as long as the information is helpful and hopeful to others, and that's a good keynote to go on.
Well, we are told that we mm-hmm. are to love others as ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think until we really do that, we're not going to complete the course.
Yes, for me, spirituality means meeting the divine within. It's as though you see a delicate still happening within. It's very quiet, it's very still. And then there are all these other signs that happen in the outer life as a result of having met the divine within. And to me, it's summed up in the fruits of the Spirit, when I see that being expressed through other people and other parts of life, then I know I am in attune with the divine within, because that's what I'm experiencing through others in their reflections back. And that's what I'm giving out also. And it's a cyclical kind of thing.
So your spiritual disciplines then are those practices that you have personally that help you get in touch with that divine within.
Exactly. That attunement.
And those for you are? prayer, meditation? Are those the strongest ones? Others?
Oh, really? How I do that?
Mm-hmm.
Music,
okay.
Poetry, in addition to the meditation, the
okay.
prayer. Being in an open space, being in the woods, being in water. Those are all physical ways of my getting in touch and going within.
Well, I also was going to say with what Carol was talking about with the young man who was from Africa, and what you have just said, the combination of intuition, and where Carol was sitting there and knew she needed to talk to this fellow on the plane next to her, that's the key. One of the keys with intuition and knowing what you're supposed to do or what you're expected of you is having some kind of self-awareness. So part of intuition development has to be some aspect of your identity, and it's not your ego, you know, or your identity so much. It's really more the higher identity. You have to understand the lower identity and your pitfalls and your weaknesses and whatnot. But you have to know all the identities going up and the higher consciousness and the soul identity. And there's going to be some contact with that. To know that you're supposed to talk to that person on the plane next to you at that moment, and to know and to accept that you can't fix it for them or do everything for it. And since some of us work with people all the time, two of us here at least do, one of the things that's very difficult when you're a professional is knowing where that line of information stops and where it starts. And there are things a psychic can know that are not useful for a person. That are not useful for you for them to know. It's not useful for the client to know. And so I think true spirituality is understanding those lines, understanding those. There was a psychic I knew in Massachusetts. I didn't know her well. I only met her once. But she was one of these, what I call a natural psychic. She could look at people and know things about them. She could say, you know, this is going to happen to you, and this and this and this. And it was completely unrestrained psychic information, which is completely useless in my opinion, and that's just my opinion, but I think it's absurd in a lot of ways, because there was nothing a person could do about the information. So one young woman I knew was told that she was going to be married 3 times, and she would divorce the first 2 men, and then the 3rd one would die on her. And she's lived her whole life. She's gotten away from this sort of thing, because of spirituality and psychicness and everything all together, because of this one experience with this one, I consider a rather immoral psychic who just had no control over her mouth. She just had no way of teaching this woman where she was in life and helping her, meeting her where she was, and helping her do the best job she could with each relationship, with the relationship she was in, so maybe she could have overcome it if the woman had really helped her. And that's the subtlety of working with intuition, is you have to know when to stop and why you only get some information and why you don't get some of the information the person wants. Sometimes it is their free will, and they got to be told that. It's your free will. You can do what you want with this. This is your call. You know, so anybody can develop intuition and psychicness, but what you do with it is really what you're going to be tested on as a human being.
Can you look comment? We talked about your early training in dream study, psychological healing, forgiveness rituals. Which of those disciplines then or now do you find to be the most helpful to keep you focused and centered as you carry in a profession?
The prayers. I'm Catholic as well, so I was raised Catholic as well, and so prayer is still sort of a big thing that I still do. And also, I have to work real hard to get quiet because I'm a very energetic person. So I have to work real hard to get quiet. So once I get quiet, it's like what Mary was talking about, as far as walking in the woods or being on the water or being immersed in water. There sometimes you have to actually physically put yourself in a different place in order to turn off all this. Once you open this up, you have to work 10 times harder to get, I think, from my opinion, for me anyway, to get calmer. Because you're picking up on too much, and if you react to everything you pick up on, you could lose it. So I think that's one of the things that, you know, that I do. I also found that I think journaling is useful. And I also am trying to get back to reading. And I'm not saying reading, not just spiritual stuff, but like novels and stuff. You know, just trying to get back to that quiet inner place of reading and being focused quietly. And I also do some artwork.
I'm interested in knowing when you get to that fine line and you're over the edge of that and too much of that is coming in. What are your ways of protecting yourself?
Well, the most instantaneous way is prayer, because it's the only thing that works instantaneously. If you use, you know, because, you know, you're Catholic, so you understand that. You
yes.
call Jesus and you do some of the prayers that we were all taught and we memorized and we learned to say real fast. But that's what that's what one of the things I do if it's an instantaneous situation. Longer term, I do think that it's one of the hardest things to work on is to learn about protection. And one of the hardest lessons I've had in the last 15 years has been boundaries. So it's been one of the hardest things I've had to learn, and I could tell anybody who wants to do this professionally, I hope it's part of your life purpose, because if it isn't, it's going to be even harder. So,
I do want to come back to that. I want to give the other two ladies a chance to maybe comment on this idea of spiritual disciplines or what they've heard, but I want to come back to this whole relationship of life, purpose, and psychic ability and to the ladies too, eventually. So, Kathy, Carol, any comments on what we've heard?
Well, for me, the concept of spirituality is getting in tune with the divine within, just as we have said already, and particularly getting connected with my higher self. All of my information and all of my intuitive guidance is filtered through my higher self, even though it may come from the energy around another person, it may come from their guides, my guides, the angelic realm. It's still all going to be filtered through my higher self, and I have a very personal connection with my higher self, which I trust. For me, if information starts kind of coming through too fast, I simply ask it to stop and slow down, and it does. But I never go into a reading or a counseling situation where I don't meditate beforehand, unless it's something that comes up very spontaneously. And then I will ask the client to take several deep breaths, and while they're doing that, I get myself centered, I get my chakras all aligned and cleared out, and there's always the white light of the Christ for protection involved in every reading. And the prayer is that whatever is for the highest good of this client at this moment is what is going to come through, and nothing more and nothing less. And for the most part, that is my experience. When I get information that I know they shouldn't have, I know they shouldn't have it. I mean, I also get that information, that it's not appropriate for them to have it. But one of the things that Mary was talking about in terms of the lady in New England, if you get information for a client that is perhaps not totally positive in the situation where she was going to be married three times, to me, the whole concept is to introduce that client or reinforce for that client the sense of their own personal power, their own connection to the divine within them. There are very few things that are going to happen to us in life that we don't have some control over changing. And I really believe that's part of what my work is, to help people to know who they are, why they came here, and how to get in touch with their own personal power so that they have a feeling, a sense of being calm and serene and in control of their life. Because we are. If we don't know it, we still are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're creating our lives every day, and for people who don't know that they're creating it, then they may have a little more chaos in their lives than some who are very aware of it. But I meditate twice each day. I learned that in the study groups, and it has served me particularly well. I use dreams. I set it up when I go to bed at night. If I have a particular question or a client that I'm working with that I feel needs assistance, I use prayer. But I call in the angels all the time. The influence of the angelic realm for me has a way of making the whole atmosphere lighter and bringing up a joy in the situation, because I believe that there's no situation that you can be in life that you can't feel the presence of God in your heart, which to me is always a loving, almost a singing in my heart. It doesn't matter what actually is going on out there, because it's our perspective of what's going on out there that makes the difference. And if we can instill that information in a client, then we always have the choice of what perspective we will take. Choice is a tool that is not taught very often, but one that's really important for people to understand and to know. You can just decide that you're going to have a different perspective. So.
Carol, the spiritual disciplines that are given in the study group material are very helpful and give you a lot of practice, a lot of insight, and a lot of food for thought. And one of Edgar Cayce's definitions of the soul is that the soul is an individual, is a unit of God individualized. And going along with what Kathy said, if you can help each person to realize in a sort of an existential way that each person creates his own life and is responsible for it. Now, we come in with a purpose, and hopefully we fulfill that purpose, because that is the assignment that we have chosen to fulfill. And so we need to discipline ourselves to hang in there when the going gets tough, because life is not supposed to be a bowl of cherries. It is supposed to be a learning experience, And that doesn't mean that learning is unpleasant all the time. It can be quite joyous. But meditation, as everybody I think here agrees, is very important. And remembering that I am that I am, which gives you a great feeling of responsibility. I am creating, and it is my responsibility to help other people to understand that they are creating too, and don't get into this blame game. And how important just little things are. It's very important. You hear story after story how just because someone smiled at someone, they maybe were on their way to commit suicide, changed their mind. I mean, that's rather dramatic, but it does happen. And I just read a story the other day at the Venture Inward that had come in, and I think will probably be published, because it was so inspiring. And this woman had great faith and went through terrible pain in the concentration camp, which wasn't what she was concentrating on, but just this family had saved her after hiking through the Alps. And then when she got over here, why, she sent a care package for 7 years. And finally, after 12 years, got over there and got the feedback that that's what had kept that family alive. She had saved their lives after they had saved hers. And she prayed about this. And this is the kind of thing that this spiritual discipline thing will lead to. So you just hear so many inspiring stories from just ordinary people like we are.
Go ahead, Kathy.
I was just going to say, one thing that I would like to add is that often when you bring a client to the realization that they're creating their own lives, you have to be careful to make certain that they're not going to then start blaming themselves for creating negative in their lives. That's a very important thing, because you can turn them in the wrong direction by doing that. And so, again, it's the idea of having them understand the empowerment that they have and that they can use it in a very positive, creative way.
And learning to say thank you for whatever comes.
Absolutely.
Because you may think, oh, this is a horrible thing, but after you've made it through it, you find that you have learned a great deal. Dubron says, the deeper sorrow carves, the more joy one can contain. So this is the kind of thing that we have to keep our sight on the long view.
My comments were more in summary on this particular aspect, and I wanted to quote from The Covenant, Volume 1, Number 1, May 1979, that Herb Perrier put together. And when he was talking about the difficulties and pitfalls of turning within, oftentimes when it's first done, people experience an array of voices, feelings, impulses, and experiences. And I think it's important to mention that before we go within, something like the study group readings, Volume 7, page 83, says, open our hearts to the unseen forces and throw about us that protection found in the thought of Christ.
Yeah.
Page 83. And it's put in different ways. And this one, really, we feel in our study group was really so important, because it's first opening to the unseen forces. And is a whole, well, it's like what we see in that quilt that Marilyn did, and then throwing about us protection. So that the opening to those forces occurs.
The quilt Mary's referring to happens to be right next to us here in the auditorium, and it basically shows the world and coming down in kind of a V shape, or a beautiful multicolor collection of fabrics, pastels, the rainbow colors, in a V shape, as if something from outside the universe is coming down into a very focused point, and you could say it's coming right down inside of you. So that sense of all that powerful energy coming from all the universe and then being focused inside of you in some way, and then how to control and channel and work with that energy. So that's the quilt that Mary referred to.
Well, one other thing I want to say about the intuition also, with what all of you have said, has been the idea, and I do work with this, because I it's not just working with clients, it's also working with the self. I think that intuition is sort of a double-edged sword. And on one hand, you have your own life to balance, and your own psychological work to do, and your own spiritual healing work, and your own awakening and awareness to. On the other hand, when you're working with other people, that's sort of like a whole other, there's a responsibility to that. There's also a tremendous amount of learning that you learn from working with the other people. So it's like a big gigantic classroom. So I think that there's a balance between the two, and because it is a double-edged sword, because there's times when you really have an awful lot of work to do yourself, before you can even get into the point of working with other people. And then when you work with other people, it doesn't mean your lessons are over. I think they actually get harder. And I think that's the problem, is the more awareness you get, the more responsibility you get, the more you're responsible for what you know, the harder it becomes in some way. So it's not this la-la psychic wannabe stuff, you know, where, oh, this is fun and it's la-la and let's have fun with it. It isn't fun. And it isn't supposed to be fun. It's more about what we've all talked about with the spirituality and helping people get through tough situations like the Nazi camp, like that, or our lives, or our death in our family, or stuff like that. It's about life. And I think that's what we're trying to get through in the 21st century, is where people are going to have more awareness. So we're going to be made more responsible for what we know. And that's why I think everybody's going to need to work with this more, but they're going to need to work with it responsibly.
Charles Thomas, you had a chance to join us now. You want to comment on some of the questions that you've been thinking about in relation to this topic?
Well, this question of the relationship between one's spiritual growth and one's psychic ability is interesting one. I think a fairly unique contribution of the Casey readings with regard to an understanding of psychic ability has to do with the stress that is put on working with psychic ability in the context of one's spiritual growth. Although, certainly in my experience with people who have had psychic ability, the two don't necessarily go hand in hand. Some of my early big shocks with people with lots of psychic ability was that their spiritual development was not hand in hand with that. Some of you may remember an Indian medicine man here named Rolling Thunder, that I was very interested in, very excited about Native Americans, and I had watched his very unusual abilities other places besides the ARE, and invited him here, and he stayed at our home for a while, and it was very clear to me very quickly that he had developed great deal of psychic ability, and yet his perspective on spiritual development and if I might be so bold, his own spiritual development was certainly very different than my understanding of spiritual development, or it just was not. I think psychic ability is a tool, maybe like a knife or like electricity, and it can be used to, in a self-destructive way. It can be used to hurt other people. And he was very much a warrior and used his psychic ability to hurt other people, to do battle with other people that I didn't completely understand, but I saw with, and I'm really a skeptic with regard to some of this, but saw some of that in living color. So I was shocked at the fact that these two things don't automatically go together, and it impressed upon me the importance of the contribution of the Casey readings to all of this, and that a spiritual framework is really important. My own experiences, personal experiences with psychic ability, my little blips of it invariably occur in the context of when I seem to be most focused on trying to help someone else. And to me, for me personally, that's tied with my sense of spiritual growth and spiritual development, the importance of that focus on service. Now, whether that's a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy for me, whether I've tied those two together in my head, and so that's how it unfolds, or whether that's a principle that relates to other people as well, I'm not sure. But clearly, the Casey readings perspective is that these two things need to be tied together, and I don't think they always are.
That's a really good point that you're making. I think that we all have abilities that we can misuse, and I heard Rolling Thunder years ago down in Florida, and his main purpose of that speech that day seemed be lambasted the white people for what they had done to the Indians. He was very, that wasn't, of course, what people had come to hear, but that
he
was his
angry
message. Oh,
and
yes,
upset.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Right, and I think, well, maybe we need to hear this type of psychic so that we can understand this isn't the proper way to use this this ability, really, that everybody has.
Well,
and you're right that the readings definitely channel us in the correct direction, because your grandfather was very concerned that he was following from the right source, wasn't he?
Well, psychicness is also perceived as a kind of power, and not that it is once you actually do it. I mean, if you do it right, it's not a power, but I think people perceive it on the outside like it's something powerful. Now, I'm not saying that's what it is or that's how you use it, but I think it's perceived that way. And I think because Carolyn Liero said also, told me when I first came to Virginia Beach when I was working in the psychic development, you know, doing readings for people and all that, she was saying that that there were some people that she had gone to conferences with. Now, she named them, I don't remember their names now, but they were also well-known people who had written books and that sort of thing, like this fellow you're talking about. And the first thing that she found out later on is one had a really bad habit of seducing all the women, and another one had a really bad habit of, you know, taking all the money. And so there's all kinds of issues with some of these guys. But you see, I think what we got to do is differentiate true, genuine intuition and spiritual development, and put those, always make sure that they're together. If anybody wants to work with them, make sure they're together, because otherwise there's a wannabe-ness with it and there's a power-hungriness to it, and I think that's very dangerous. And I think it creates a sense, if you don't have life purpose, if people find a life purpose, they don't get mad, they're not going to get frustrated, they're going to find out, oh, this is, my life purpose is involved with counseling, and with counseling I can use intuition, or my life purpose is you know, teaching exercise physiology to everybody, and through that I can teach more healing and more health-oriented stuff. I mean, that's what life purpose is supposed to be for. And that, in that is a kind of personal power, because you find out what you're really here for. But I think we need to separate this psychic thing from this power wannabe stuff, because I do think it's perceived poorly in society, and that's why all of us have changed our titles from psychic to intuitive, because we're afraid of, we don't want to be perceived in the same category as these 900 numbers and this other stuff.
Well, don't you think that one of the great things that Carol Ann Liero teaches is about the ego and the involvement in that, and how to set it aside when you're going to work with healing of someone?
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is what causes an awful lot of the trouble, is that ego factor.
And I think one of the important things that you're alluding to here is the setting of an ideal, each of us having a personal ideal and working with in that. For me, it's like a compass setting. And I've learned now to listen to a lot of those subtle energies that occur so that I don't have to visualize that compass setting. But early on, it was just like I was sailing my boat and watching the compass. And when I was falling off the mark with spirituality and the intuitive, as we were speaking about, it would show up on the compass. And all I had to do was adjust a few things to get back on course. And that ideal in my life, it has been for several years now, and I keep waiting to change it to do something else, but it's being open to God's love and share that love with others. And I'm the one who causes the limitations. God's love is always there. I'm the one who puts the barriers in the way. So if I can remind myself to be open to that love, then that can come through me and share that with others. And it's important for me to remember that, and when I get in various groups or even small groups, I'm reminded about that through the other people that are around me.
This idea of life purpose that Mary has raised, that seems crucial to people who are getting involved in the Institute. Harmon Breaux raises that in his book, Religion and Psychic Experiences, some of the material you've already been assigned to read for this course, that he talks about psychic abilities, intuitive abilities, developing in different ways in different individuals, because the life purpose is different, and the way a person can use those abilities is different. So to jump into the Institute courses and to think that you're going to be developing an ability in one track might be misleading if you get the sense of, like Mary says, get life purpose, a sense of ideal first, and then let unfold what unfolds and see how does that then fit into your life purpose. If you're a teacher, how can you then be more intuitive with your students? You may not hang up a shingle and be giving psychic readings to everyone, but in your profession, as that grows, you'll find developing what you need in the way of your own intuitive abilities in order to be more effective in your own life purpose, in your own career. I think that's really crucial for people to understand as a focal point of what comes out of the case of readings.
Also, Kathy had said earlier, she was told at a certain point in time that she needed to do readings. It wasn't like she was saying, oh, please, let me do this. And it's the same thing with me. I never planned on being a psychic. Nobody wants to have to explain it to their family. Nobody wants to have to explain it to the tax guys. Nobody wants to have to do it this way. It's a lot of work, actually. So, I mean, it's not something that, if it's part of your life purpose, and you're going to do it maybe for lessons or for learning, or you're going to do it for a lot of different things, maybe to get a body of work from it. There's a lot of things you're going to do it for, you know, for your own personal learning and your own experiences and to become a better person and become more patient or something. But there's a lot of different things that you learn from it, but it's not all. I don't think everybody who chooses to be a psychic necessarily should be a psychic, because I've had readings from people before who are happy to run out and be psychics. And one of the tests I learned from those readings was when I was told certain things, like that I would never get married, that I would never, you know, amount to much. There's a lot of different things that I was told. And I know that the lesson in it was this person was coming from a more ego place, not really from a higher spiritual ideal. She wasn't helping me with my life purpose. She wasn't helping me with what I was there for, which is why both of us, I think, work with readings that are like for people's life purpose, because once everybody finds their place, they're all happy. But I think that, you know, it was really a test for me to listen to my own intuition and stop running around trying to find psychics to tell me where to go. Because when I was younger, and that's one of the early stages I got into this when I was in college. And even high school, actually. So one of the problems is, I was so young getting into it, one of the yaya stages of psychic stuff is running around getting readings and running around, you know, asking people for, you know, and if a person says, wow, you can do this, all of a sudden you believe them and they're God. And that's what we got to get away from. It's a little stage. It's a little elementary stage of processing, and luckily I did it real young. But I think that's something when people first open up into this, the psychic's responsibility, if they're going to work with a person, is to put the power back in their hands and, you know, give them the control back. But also, you know, we got to recognize there is a young stage in development, and part of it is to listen to your own intuition. If the person says, gee, you're going to marry 15 people and you're going to, you know, buy a lottery ticket tonight and all that nonsense, well, I think you got to learn to listen to your own intuition.
So. That is so important what you have said, because there's a little pamphlet to, I don't know who got it together, it's the ARE, but it's about being your own psychic. And I think this really is ultimately what each person should strive for. But even among study group members, I have seen people become dependent. It's so easy for them to become dependent on someone else. And all the time we should be encouraging them to look within, we all plug into the same source, and draw on that. And there's danger. I know even in the intuitive sessions around here, I had one woman that I had worked with before come to me and talk to me about the reading that she had gotten, and she said, you know, if I believed everything that she told me, I would go home and commit suicide. And I was so upset. Mm. And I thought, my, we must be very careful. We must be more responsible. And you've addressed this. And I feel we have a terrific responsibility not to tell people things that are going to cause them to, you know, maybe give up or do harm to themselves. We just can't have
Well, not to addict them to this.
Oh, that's a good word.
Thing is ridiculous. It is an addiction.
And we spoke of that earlier, and that's one of the ways of evaluating a psychic, is the material, is the information received helpful and hopeful? Is it something I can take into my daily life and apply in whatever ways, just each day? It isn't some grandiose kind of scheme or some dramatic thing that's going to frighten people.
Well, does it heal? Does it help solve problems?
Exactly.
Does it help you get insight into who you are? Does it help you? It's not supposed to answer everything. That's their job.
Right.
They've got to do some of it.
Well, I think you and Kathy, who do professional readings, have lots of opportunity to help. I have never felt drawn to giving readings, and probably a good thing for people that I don't. But I feel that by following my intuition, that I really help people in other ways. And that really is more my goal. I don't want to be the person they're addicted to and they're looking to me for guidance. But I'm glad to help when I feel that I'm, you know, it's one of these nothing happens by chance situations and I really know what I'm walking into those anymore.
I'll bet Carol has given Paul and her kids a few readings. I think we all do that.
Right.
We're really tuned
right.
in and trying to help, whether we close our eyes and the lights dim, or whether it just comes from
You're right.
Heart.
My children have had lots of direction, and they thanked me for it later.
I think the four of us, I'll include myself, that aren't professionally working with clients, can we take a few seconds to reflect and then share, how are we using those growing intuitive abilities? We want to help people see that all those abilities can be used in life. You don't ever want to hang up your shingles. So if we can come up with just a couple of instances and share. Carol's already shared about her experience on the airplane of knowing that she was supposed to meet this individual, and that's become working with an individual in a life-saving situation for several years now. So the other four of us, if we can share for a few seconds.
I would address a little different question. I think what has been especially helpful for me in trying to better understand psychic ability, mm-hmm. just try to understand whether it's my own little blips of it from time to time or just understand the whole concept as it's described in so many different sources, trying to work with people who have unwanted psychic experiences. That also is a great responsibility, but I think especially maybe for the students that are or will be a part of this institute, that might be a helpful role for them, either fairly quickly or to sort of aim toward. My training is as a child psychologist, and without a doubt, I have learned more about myself and my psychic ability through working with children who've been referred to me by their parents who are upset and confused about the child's psychic ability, or the child himself or herself is upset about their psychic ability. And so I think that can be helpful. Let me give you an example that's going on right now for me. Maybe we could all troubleshoot this a little bit. But there's an elderly lady here in Virginia Beach who called me recently, called our home early in the morning. She had awakened beside her husband who had died during the night, and I'm the executor of their estate, and they had left some money to the ARE, and that's how I got involved with it. Never really met these people, didn't know them very well. I guess I had met them. In any case, as I began to meet her, we got the body out of the bed and got all of that straight, but over a month or so, in talking with her, she said that Walt, her husband, was continuing to communicate with her. They had separate, I'll try to make this very quick, but they had separate bedrooms, although he had been ill and they were sleeping together in what was sort of her bedroom when he died. But during the night, she said, often after he died, he would come in and stand by her bed, and she didn't actually see him, but she felt him. She would wake up during the night, and then she would hear him speak to her. And she wasn't sure if she heard the sound in the room or just in her head, but she was sure that it was Walt, and they had begun to have conversations, and she had asked him questions, little questions about her continuing life, some little logistical sorts of questions, legal questions and things, and other broader philosophical questions, and he would invariably answer. She had no interest in the ARE or this kind of thing. Walt had been the one who had been really interested. She was nervous and maybe not frightened by this, but certainly puzzled by it and nervous about going to her minister about it. Fear he would try to exorcise her or the house or something. And she felt it was a loving kind of connection that was going on. So we talked about it a little. And I thought maybe it was some in her head. I wasn't sure whether Walt was really there or not, and this was shortly after his death. So this went on for, it's been a couple of months now, and I asked her to keep notes of their conversations, and she has done that. But a couple of weeks ago, and I went back, and I see her every couple of weeks and ask her how Walt is doing. His ashes, the ashes of his body, are in the living room there on the coffee table, which is a little bit strange, but not that strange. And so she still has very much has a relationship with Walt in a number of different ways. She said, "Well, Charles Thomas, things have changed a little. Walt really likes spring flowers, and especially like daffodils and azaleas. And as they began to bloom recently, I would go out in our yard where he planted lots of these and pick some, put them in a little vase, and put them in his bedroom," which was really kind of a study, but it was at his desk and file cabinets and all. And he has begun to move those flowers into my bedroom by his side of the bed, on the little night table by his side of the bed. I said, Esther, show me. Let me see. Let me see that. Are you sure you're not walking in your sleep and doing this? I was sort of teasing her a little. And are you sure you don't do it and forget about it? She's in her 80s. And he said, no, he does this. Have you ever seen the vase move? No, I haven't seen the vase move, but they're in one place when I go to bed. They're by his side of my bed when I wake up. Hmm. Well, she convinced me, and I'm going to go sleep. I'm going to go sleep in Walt's room with the vase of flowers and put a little thread on the door, big enough for the vase to get through the door, but for Esther not to get through the door without the thread moving. And that may sound, but this is really classic poltergeist. I mean, from the parapsychological literature, often this happens with adolescents, with all of the endocrine energies and things that are percolating at that time. But it happens with other people too, and especially when someone is stirred up emotionally. Again, there's literature on that. I just can't tell you how helpful those kinds of experiences have been to me in trying to understand psychic ability. And using that kind of interaction with Esther and the results of that interaction in talking with other people about their experiences, not so much to make it go away or to help them develop it. Usually they want it to go away. They're confused and but often in the process of understanding it, it begins, discover that they have some healing ability, or that they can use this sensitivity that's sort of bubbled up in an unexpected, unwanted direction. They can use it and kind of direct a little. And I think especially our group, the Institute, and folks connected with the ARE have this responsibility for putting this in a spiritual context, in a framework of one's personal philosophy that hopefully includes a kind of spiritual direction. So I would respond by saying, be open to trying to help people understand their psychic experiences, as distinct maybe from just focusing on cranking up one's own psychic ability. As I have felt more comfortable with the whole idea of psychic ability, even though I was raised in a family with my face pressed in it, it has been uncomfortable for me and awkward for me. As I have felt more comfortable in working with other people, I think I've become more comfortable with my own in a kind of indirect way, and it has manifested more and more, little bits and pieces.
Well, also, everybody has a spiritual door. Everybody has a spiritual awakening at different times in their lives. Now, if Walt passed away, it could be his wife's spiritual door, and he's a safe door. She knows him. She trusts
exactly.
This guy. So, I mean, everybody has a spiritual kick-through. They can get sick or, you know, any number of billion of things can happen. But it's a spiritual awakening, and that's what you want to take it as, you know?
On that note, I wanted to follow what you were saying, Charles Thomas, as when you asked that question, Keith, what first came up to me was one of the ways I apply my intuitive energies is in helping those who ask to be helped. And it's just very simple. For example, and you brought to mind with your story when my brother was passing over and I was called to be of assistance to him, who was very resistant to any thought of any of these that we're working with. Well, he made a turnaround in those 5 days. And at one of the conferences here, Carol Ann Liaros had called upon me to share what it was I learned as a way shower, how to use my intuitive energies. And I had shared it here and went through this whole process, and included in that was sharing what you, Charles Thomas, had shared with me about when your father passed and working up the experiment of when they're on the other side and a signal back to you. And my brother and I had done that, and he was willing to do that experiment. So as I was telling about this at the conference, I don't think I had told that part of it, just my experience of helping my brother make the transition. And at the end of the conference, a woman came running over for me, a conferee, and she had drawn three pictures on a paper as I had been speaking. And one was the sun shining brightly, another was a window that was open halfway, and then the third. That was not the important part of it. The way she was holding the paper in her hands was the configuration of what my brother and I had created as the signal that he would be communicating through another to me over here. I mean, it just blew me away. And so these are the gifts that come back. One never knows how that is. And so I'm a believer. Yes, you can, on the other side. On the other hand, experiences like when I was in Canada recently and doing a presentation on the Search for God program, a woman at the very end who was having some difficulty, personal difficulties, speaking with someone else in the audience, and it just erupted at that particular time. And so I asked her if we could carry that on as soon as I concluded the workshop, but she was very happy. Well, she had been carrying a resentment for over 16 years, something that had happened in Germany, and that I would be the one called upon to sit down with her and just be with her, be where her energies were, and just to be helpful and hopeful. And it just dissipated all of those resentments. And of course, she was emotionally very upset about it all. And it's just so easy. The compassion is there. And she just said, you don't know how many times I have tried to release that resentment. And it was a study group issue thing that had happened. But we never know when we're going to be called upon or in what ways we're going to be called upon. And so I just use these abilities every day in my work, in my individual life. And I've learned to listen to that wee small voice. The one time that it happened when I was writing the check to pay for the vertical blinds that I was having put throughout my whole unit, 28 windows. I mean, something as mundane as writing out a check. And the message I got was, check the bank account. Well, I started arguing with that little inner voice saying, I know I had put that money in the bank 3 weeks ago. It was when I first moved here for moving in expenses. It's not there. Check bank account. Three times it said it. And so I didn't finish writing the check. I told the sales lady that I would see her tomorrow. I went directly to the bank, to the teller, and the teller verified that the funds were available that I needed. And so then I thought, well, they are, check the bank. And the message came back, check further. So I went over to the vice president, whom I knew quite well, and I said, I know you think this is a little ridiculous, but I'm getting a message, I need to check it. So he checked in his computer, he said, absolutely, the funds are there. And I started to walk away, and I turned, and I said, is there any other place that we can check? I was still getting that message. Longer story short, he called Alexandria, Virginia, to the headquarters bank, and when he checked there, the funds were not available. And he said, why so? Apparently, when funds over a certain amount are required, there's a number that the bank needs to put on the back of the check before it sends it away to my New York bank to be cashed. And the Virginia bank failed to do that, so the New York bank didn't honor it, and it was caught back and forth in the mails over 4 weeks now. Mm. And so there was no way I had of consciously knowing that. The local bank didn't even know it. And, you know, it just saved me from bouncing a check. Mm-hmm. But I validate every one of those feelings now. Mm-hmm. Important stuff.
We had one that could have come as a result of Charles Thomas's experience with the lady, but the element came up dealing with fear when some of these issues first start to surface your abilities. Have you had to deal with that in your life or with clients, people who may be working with this material for the first time might find that sense of discomfort or fear?
Well, I absolutely had it in my personal life. I was terrified of the very idea of allowing any of my psychic experiences to continue. When they began, I was a child, and of course, I didn't know what was happening then, and my parents just did not, they didn't know what was happening, and they didn't approve, so I stopped it, and nothing happened. But when I got involved in the study group, and I began to meditate twice each day, within the period of a few months, I began to have other psychic experiences, And I was just terrified of having anything, allowing anything like that to happen. I didn't understand why. So I really did shut it down and did not allow it to become, actually it got in there insidiously anyway, because of course, you know, I'd get these hunches and I'd go with those, because those weren't like psychic experiences, those were okay. But I didn't actually do anything about purposely, consciously allowing information to come through me for myself or for others until 1989, which was a long time after I began the study group work in 1968. And later found out that a part of the reason for the fear, Aaron Abramson gave me a reading in 1980 and or 1979, and in that reading he told me that I had brought a tremendous amount of fear into this life experience, that it had nothing to do with this life experience and that I should let it go. I didn't really address that specifically at the time, but then I began to understand, because I started having dreams that indicated to me that I had actually been burned to death for utilizing my skills in a past life experience. And it rang true with me, because I was always afraid that I would be in a car accident and that there would be a fire. I didn't want to wear a seatbelt because I was afraid I'd be trapped and that I would be burned. And I always had this tremendous respect and fear of fire. So once I began to understand where it was coming from, then I began to work with it with prayer and meditation and releasing and that sort of thing, and I was able to let that go. But I find that many people who come to me and I talk to them about their life purpose, they have the same fear. One of the fears is just that they're not good enough, that they can't, you know, they couldn't possibly do anything like that. A fear that they can't get this information for themselves or they can't trust it. But I think fear is something that needs be addressed if we're offering any kind of a curriculum to students, because they're very likely to run into it in one form or another. Mm-hmm. I mean, it may only be a minor fear, but they may have experiences that bring them fears too. The battered boundaries that Henry does is very important, because there are people who are so open that things start to happen to them and they don't have any. They don't have any foundation for it. They may not be study group members, and they may not have anyone that they can go to about these things. So I think it's very important that anyone who's going to, whether you're going to become a psychic or not, it doesn't really matter whether you're going to give readings to people. I'm sure that Mary has experiences where she assists people in other ways than giving readings. I know I do. I think it's important to understand that you have to be able to address a fear element when it comes to you.
Yeah. I can relate to what you were saying with the fear, because I feel that there are two different kinds of psychicness, and I've just been sort of understanding it since I've been at Atlantic University, trying to understand psychicness, because I really don't get a lot of it. But a lot of it is, there's two kinds. One kind, I think, is the natural psychics who see stuff all the time and have all these psychic experiences. And I found out when I could do a reading, and I think anybody can learn to come to be intuitive. I think it's just another element of the brain. I think it's we're set up through the chakra system to be able to do this. I do think anyone can do this. Now, whether they have the morality to do it, or whether they're sane enough to do it, or whether they're healthy enough to do it, that's going to be a whole different ball of wax. But the other, there's the natural psychics who are always been psychic, you know, and always see stuff and dead people walking around and all that. And then there's the other people who are like, that's my category, is the latter, and the other people are the hypersensitive. And I was always hypersensitive, but I didn't see dead people, I didn't see ghosts, I didn't have experiences like that. And I was in a Catholic family, and we were very, very protected, very, very protected family. And so we always had the church, and we always had the angels and all that. So there was not a lot of psychic experience, psychic stuff going on. And so what was good was, it was just an okay endeavor until I had to go out in the world. And then when I went out in the world, the hypersensitivity, it was easy for me to be overwhelmed, and so a lot of it turned into anxiety. And so what I find is I end up working and attracting a lot of people who have anxiety issues. And I have, and my family has, and everybody I seem to know seems to have these. And I used to get so sick before I actually did a reading. I used to get so anxious. I know I shouldn't say this on the tape because everyone's going to hear it. But it's one of those things where I used to get so anxious before it. I would just drive myself crazy. And to this day, I still have to work the anxiety down. I mean, I have to work because I'm not sure where it came from, why I'm doing it exactly all the time. You know, so I feel like, you know, will it actually be there? You know, and then when I'm centered and when I'm actually working, it's there. But boy, the personality does not necessarily have that confidence. And so there really is, and it's not like we're unconscious, or you're conscious too, right? We're both conscious psychics, so obviously, you know, there's a consciousness. But I think fear is a major element, and for me, it comes out through anxiety. And other people may have it in other ways, you know, being afraid of it in other ways.
And I think we need to know what to do about it. I remember when I was studying with Henry Reed in his classes at AU, there were some times I would leave a weekend intensive and I would just be wide open. Mm-hmm. I'd be at the grocery store and just seeing what's going on in the lives of these people, and I didn't want all that information, and I hadn't properly closed out. Mm-hmm. And that really needs to be stressed and emphasized in any curriculum that we do, is what do we do with the fear, what do we do as we open up, how do we close down, how do we protect ourselves. Yeah.
Two of the things that were mentioned in the Casey readings to parents who were asking about their children who were fearful of psychic experiences they were having, or that I think are probably also applicable to adults, or one to try to help the child, or as an adult oneself, to thoroughly familiarize oneself with information, autobiographical, preferably autobiographical information or biographical information about people, reliable, trustworthy, stable people who are psychic or having psychic experiences. The readings urged parents to find those passages. Sometimes they were quoted in the readings that are in the Bible. Lots of psychic experiences, of course, in the lots. And to read those to young children as they were going to sleep or when they were wide awake and could ask about it. But also I think it's important for people like Mary and Kathy, to write about your psychic experiences in a autobiographical way, and then make that available to others so that we can read about that. And there's a comfort in numbers, and in especially if it's someone you know or it's material that you respect and feel comfortable with. In these old autobiographies of Eileen Garrett and Rosalind Haywood, very down-to-earth, sensible women describing their childhood and then their adult stresses and strains with their psychic ability, are, I think, very helpful, reassuring to people who are fearful. And then the stories that can be provided for children on their level. So that's one. Another in the readings is to get around other people who are having psychic experiences. You know, the ARE camp, the children's camp, was originally started with this as a purpose, to provide a setting for young people who were struggling with psychic experiences to be with other young people and with counselors who were not necessarily psychic, but open to and treated this whole phenomenon in a normal, natural way and didn't make a big deal of it. And that's complex. And to talk, and we have had groups of children here. We've brought children here who're having a lot of psychic experiences to be with other children in little non-public sort of conferences, discussion groups, really focused on fun, going to the beach and riding horses and stuff. But there were also opportunities to talk together, and then lots of talking went on during the fun stuff, getting ice cream cones and so on. And that kind of peer interaction, I think, can go a long way with children and with us as adults to getting through some of our questions and doubts about psychic experiences. Although that's complex. I mean, stories, even with kids, I mean, we psychic stories, as you know, are like fish stories and golf scores. With each telling, it can get a little wilder if we're not really on top of it. And kids are great at that, you know, sort of one up, oh, this is what happened. And so they're, but if, as adults, if we're aware of that and working with that ego part of it too, I think sharing experiences can be helpful in that fear.
No matter what the age, one of my favorite stories that you've told is about the horses on the dunes and that story in the Mysteries of the Mind. Just a wonderful story. Touched the child in me.
Yeah, that was a personal psychic experience. But telling that to others is just part of,
There's a good book that has come out fairly recently called Hello from Heaven. And I was trying to think of the name of the author, and it's something like Guggenheim.
Judy Guggenheim.
Yeah, Judy and Bill. Mm-hmm. They were formerly married, but they wrote the book together after they were divorced. And it gives all these experiences that people have had, and they categorize them by types. And then another wonderful part of the book is at the end, they have lots of information about societies that deal with people who are dealing with suicide in one way or another. Someone in the family has committed suicide, or someone's thinking about suicide, and a lot of helpful things. But I think, as you were kind of pointing out, that when people read that all these people, I think there were something like 2,000 experiences really that they were reporting on, they say, well, my, there's nothing so wrong with me after all. And some of the fear dissipates when they realize that this is not so abnormal after all. I know that I had a former neighbor come to me after his wife had died, and I had spent the day with her 2 weeks before she died, and she had unloaded a lot of problems about the daughter, and she was a very formal person, so I knew that this was really weighing heavy on her, and she was dying of cancer. Well, then she appeared to him after, I forget now just exactly, it wasn't too long after she'd left, and with a message for that daughter that she was so concerned about it all, and her little dog was all excited and sensed her presence, and he said, and there was an indentation on the bed, and he'd called me and said, can I come over? And I knew that he wanted me to reaffirm he wasn't crazy. And we talked about it all, and it was a great relief to him, and I know that just reading these accounts in the book. So I think this is a good suggestion, because I'm sure Mary and Kathy both have lots of experiences that would help people to be less fearful.
I have a question from Mary. Something she said about all of us being able to give readings. What do you think of this hypothesis? I certainly agree that we all have psychic ability, but it seems to me that maybe psychic ability is normally distributed in the population, just like the ability to play the piano or to throw a baseball really well, or artistic or athletic abilities or other sorts of skills or qualities, that there are few people, maybe like you guys, who are in any generation, in any culture, out on the tail of this normal distribution, who without a lot of practice, for whatever reasons, past life experiences, hereditary stuff, environmental stuff, have a lot of psychic ability right close to the surface, like a Mozart in this generation or Van Cliburn in our generation in terms of being able to play the piano. Most of us, though, are in that big hump on the normal curve, and if we practice, if we take courses as institute, or just as if we played the piano, if we practiced an hour a day, most of us could learn to play the piano a little bit. But most of us, no matter how much we practiced, would never be able to play like Van Cliburn or like Mozart in this lifetime. I speak for myself, no matter how much I practiced. <don't think. laughs> But I know if I put some energy and persistence to working with my psychic ability, just as if I spent an hour a day on the piano, there would be some ability that would blossom. And further, I think we would all agree there are all shapes and sizes of psychic ability. Giving readings is one dimension, just like playing the piano is one dimension of musical ability. But there's not a one-to-one overlap. Someone who can play the piano well can't necessarily play the oboe as well, but there's some of it. So I wouldn't want us to create the impression that take a few courses in Atlantic University or in this institute or read a few books and we can all give readings like Mary and Kathy. I think there's an increased sensitivity that we can all get more in touch with and we can develop, but that's within a context. What do you think?
I think everybody has the ability. I don't think everybody can do readings. I think everybody has, because we're all souls happening to be occupying body space right now. So I think that we're all souls. So we all have our own pathway to God. Now, I do, and that's one of the things that scares me the most. And this is what we talked about earlier about the school, is that I think this could be a dangerous precedent to say that everybody should do readings. I don't think that. I think everybody should be involved with finding out their life purpose. that's what I think the school should actually have a lot to do with, is finding out their life purpose and figuring out how their intuition fits into their life purpose. For example, I married a guy, the one I'm married to now, Kevin, you guys know him, and he's particularly good at dreams. He is just like a whiz at dreams. Symbolism with dreams I'm working on. I'll get some, you know, I'm getting better at it, but I'm not, you know, fabulous. He can like get a dream and just nail it. I mean, he can, and that's why I don't tell him my dreams anymore, because he can figure them out way too fast. So he's got this ability with dreams that has clearly not only come from some past life experience or some soul experience elsewhere, but he's so good at it and so get on with it that that's his intuition thing, that in writing, but particularly the dream thing for in this realm he can do. So I think everybody has their little pathway to God, whatever it is. Now for some people, like, do you guys remember Don Cherry? Don Cherry was a cop that came here.
Yeah.
He did readings a few years ago, and you know, but the way he did readings was he used to, he didn't want to be psychic, he was a cop. And he worked with the forensics in the police station, and he was one of those people that just intuitively knew, gee, I better swab the ceiling and see if there's anything up there, or I should. And he started realizing that he was picking up a lot of stuff psychically. Well, it just so happened this guy could draw. So over time, not only did he become a master of the forensic side of it, but he was a good artist anyway, and he started drawing the sketch artist thing, and he started getting the mugshots look like people's licenses because they were so dead on. So here's a guy that uses intuition in a job that was his life purpose, but he uses intuition, so he actually solved a lot of gruesome cases that nobody would have been able to solve. And like I said, with the psychic stuff, I don't know if the psychic profession is the purpose. It certainly isn't the only purpose in my life. There's got to be more. There's more beyond this. I mean, but I think that for a period of time, it's possible that you meet it to be able to do something. I'm not saying it's a. And like I said, I think with most people who are any good, it's not a free will choice. It just sort of happens. You don't get a job. I applied for tons of jobs when I came to Jewish. I didn't get anything. So I'm sure that there's some reason that happened that way. But I do think that the intuition. Everybody has their pathway with it. And I think creative pathways are the same thing. Because I've met musicians. You guys know the musicians and the actors I've worked with. Some of those guys are incredibly intuitive with like getting music or like knowing how to do that or you knowing how to direct or knowing how to get a role down a certain way. There's a lot of intuition with creativity, with acting and directing and theatrical endeavors and photography and everything creative. There's a tremendous amount of intuition that just flows through everything creative.
I think also, just again, the question of definition of a reading, giving readings. I was teasing you, Carol, about giving Paul and your kids readings, but an important experience for me early on is trying to understand psychic ability was with my father in Florida. Maybe you were there. This was years ago. You know, I lived there. Maybe. We were in a high school auditorium, and several of us were giving lectures. There were several hundred people. He had given a lecture, and there was a break. We were waiting for the next person. It was my turn next. I was sitting on the front row, kind of waiting. There was a little group of people around my father in front, asking him questions or getting him to autograph a book, and I was kind of half listening, nervous, ready to go up, and somebody in the group standing with my father said, a man said sort of from the back of the group, there may be a dozen people, said, Mr. Casey, I just want to thank you for saving my life the last time you were here. And it was like these E.F. Hutton commercials. It got kind of quiet. Everybody wanted to hear what was going to be said next. And my father looked up. This man was several people back in this little group around him, and he said something like, oh, what do you mean by that? And the man said, speaking over these several other people who were in front of him, so it was a kind of a loud voice. I perked up my ears. He said, well, you were here 2 years ago in this same auditorium, and I brought a book up for you to autograph, and you took the book and you started to write in it, and then you looked up and you asked me my wife's name, and I told you my wife's name, and you wrote a note to my wife and me. You put her name and my name, and then you signed the book. And I just want you to know that that note saved my life, because you must have known somehow that I was carrying a gun with me that night. I had gotten a gun that day. My wife had asked me for a divorce the day before. I was guilty and feeling guilty and depressed and ready to quit. My friend had suggested that I come to this lecture, I mean, quit life, and was going to kill myself that night. And what you wrote in that book with my wife's name and mine saved my life, and I just want to thank you. And then he said, Mr. Casey, how did you do that? And that was what we all, you know, we were. And my father just said, oh, I'm glad I was able to help. We need to get going here. And he sort of shooed people away and got me up there. But I could not wait to get put him in a corner where I could ask him. And he would know. I don't think he knew how he did it. But I would suggest that just as much as Mary or Kathy, you give a reading in whatever setting. Hugh Lynn was giving that manner. Mm-hmm. He had just given a lecture. Mm-hmm. That often pumps you, gets the mm-hmm. adrenals and other hormones working there. Often when you're giving and not trying to communicate in that way, you get your juices going. And he was open in just the way you described being in the grocery store after a workshop and being open. And he picked up, tuned in, responded to a request for help. And so I think that can, giving a reading can come in all shapes and sizes. It doesn't have to be a diploma on the wall where you take appointments, but all of us have dozens and dozens, hundreds of opportunities to give readings, to be more sensitive, to know when to listen, when not to say anything, or what to say mm-hmm. in particularly difficult situations. And I think that's part of becoming psychic, just working on that ability to give readings in the broadest sense, not mm-hmm. readings in a specific.
It makes sense if we're all one, doesn't it? And the superconscious, we're joined together, so we can be the channels by which, without even realizing it.
We are all
connected. All are, exactly.
I think, you know, we mentioned this quilt before and that picture of the funnel shape, and I referred to this article, the Covenant article is still the same, and the one spirit or the superconsciousness, we're all represented as one, the collective consciousness, and then underneath that, the subconscious, and then as the point of the cone comes down, that's the point of our physical material being on Earth. That, to me, explained a whole lot about how all of this works. And the filter is that center section. As the information from the superconscious or the collective consciousness comes down through, comes through each of our individual filters and then into the material world. And so as we give it up, this is why I think we're all separate pieces of the same puzzle. Mm-hmm. And we need one another fitting together to create the whole.
And it's on the spiritual level, and I was just sitting here thinking, it came to my mind, so I guess I'm supposed to say it, that your grandfather read that Bible through every year of his life. And there is that mm-hmm. spiritual foundation. Even if people aren't understanding it, it still is such a helpful food that prepare us for doing these things that we don't even realize we're doing.
And it's an individual filter level that Mary also referred to earlier, which is why it's so important to be involved in a personal spiritual discipline or spiritual attunement or psychological healing, as Mary talked about, part of her forgiveness rituals and things that she went through early on, even before she got into the professional field, clearing out that individual filter, because you can get garbled and that energy that comes through, if we have a certain bias or prejudice or an own blockage, we're going to misinterpret those symbols and misread, and it's going to get a garbled message, whereas the more clear, the more attuned we can make that individual filter with the higher divine source that is both within as well as filling the universe, then those messages that do come through in a much clearer way.
Mm-hmm. Well, and someday, like with Hugh Lynn, somebody could actually answer. Like right now, if any of us help some people, maybe we'd know, maybe we wouldn't know, but maybe someday, 20 years or 30 years, in the next lifetime, we would actually know that person was in trouble and be able to really and understand what was changing at that time. Maybe that's where our development is going. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're right now a little bit unconscious, but we're moving towards, I think, higher consciousness. And so I think that's what we're trying to do, is know more. I just don't think we can handle knowing it all right this second, but we're trying to open up
spiritually, without the help of spirituality, we could never open up to that degree of sensitivity, and we could never do it. We could never survive it.
I find some of the answers come through another person. Say I may have worked with a person and worked in some form of healing, let that go on about life and everything, and then zing, another experience comes through, sheds light on the situation that had just occurred, and it's a cyclical thing, and we keep getting nourished and nurtured and fed and encouraged.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the important things about saying that everyone has psychic abilities is to assist them in developing their own connection to the divine within, their own connection to their higher self, so that they get the kind of information and answers that they need for themselves, for their own lives, and that they have that guidance, that sense of comfort and security and that guidance with them all the time. For me, that's one of the big things. I don't want clients to be dependent on me. I want them to learn how to do this for themselves. I would like to be able to maybe give them an example, you know, that they can get information for themselves, but I want them to go out and be whole people and be able to help someone else, because there are all the population of the planet needs assistance at this time, and there aren't enough who are consciously aware that that we can be of service. I mean, I understand that the ARE is international now, and that's a big help. But every single individual needs to understand that they can get this information for themselves. They have a divine source within them, and they can feel secure in the information that comes through.
I would guess that you and Mary are both just delighted when someone says to you after your opening, "Oh, I see. Thank you for helping me see what I need to do now." And they go on their way, and they're not calling you up for further feedback and so forth.
Well, a lot of times they know what they're... A lot of people will say, "Well, I knew a lot of that."
Right.
It's just like, I was thinking about that, but and so your job is to confirm it. Now,
right.
There's still people
right.
who've got the yaya psychic stuff, and you're supposed to tell me something really dramatic.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you're not going to do anything really dramatic that I can find. So
tomorrow, anyway.
Not right away, but there's that. Everybody has that connection. Everybody, you see, that's the other thing. All souls are special. All souls have a really, and this is what we got to get back to with this institute, this life purpose.
Right.
If everybody gets in touch with that life purpose, and Casey did the life reading. Your grandfather did those life readings, and I think that was really, he didn't say, "Here, go call this company at this day on this time and good luck," he, you know, and call talk to Joe. He actually said, "Look, you have really a lot of talent in music, or you really have a lot you can do with this," and then the person can tap in their free will and start using their creativity and figuring out, and then their lives would open up. And I think that's what this could really be cool with, is everybody finding out what they're here for.
Well, there's so many different facets. I've always felt that solar system should be spelled S-O-U-L-A-R.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And you know, the readings say, you know, you influence, say, Jupiter or Venus or what have you, and what this means. And that's what we are. We're souls within this system that are developing, but our blinders are so on that we just can't see this universe.
I think as far as... people developing their intuition, I think the key thing is to help develop the balance between their personalities and what they need to heal in this life, in their personality, and with their soul consciousness. The more they're in touch with their soul consciousness, the easier they can heal, the faster they can heal, the more profound their healing could become. And I think the more balanced you make heaven and earth and, you know, soul and the personality, the happier people can be while they're here. And I do think that that's the key to intuition. And there was one Casey reading I just wanted to quote, with that's reading 440-4, and I thought this was real positive. I always use it when I'm teaching this sort of thing. And the question is, what is the highest possible psychic realization? And Casey's answer was that God the Father speaks directly to the sons of men, even as He has promised. That's reading 440-4, and I thought, hey, that's pretty good.
Okay. Thank you all for being here and sharing your personal experiences and your perceptions on the important emphasis that Casey puts on spirituality, spiritual growth development, and the use of and development of intuitive abilities. Thank you.